It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along for the journey as well as we look at the subject of marriage the second time around with our second broadcast on this subject, Daniel. Yeah. You have a lot of experience helping people with divorce recovery and avoiding those same repeats. And last week, if you didn't hear the show last week, we encourage you to maybe get a hold of that one. And this week, we're going to continue to look at healing and some of the priorities in healing before we try and get into another relationship.
Healing from the first one as much as we can. As we were saying last time, it's a little bit like riding a bicycle. You know, until you get on it, you can't really tweak it. So there isn't an absolute certainty when you're getting into a marriage. That's why we trust God. We trust God with the things that we can't control. But then there's an awful lot that we can control. So we were talking last week, it closed up and just kind of ran short on time. We want to finish up, carry on here today, talking about just the process of healing. And we use the rule of thumb, secure your own mask first, as we do on the airlines. Rather than trying to figure out is that person healthy for me, let's get to know me first. Let's get to know, a lot of what I do with people when I'm counseling and doing life coaching is where I started was understanding the way my life works with me. And when I got that to where I understood how my life was working, or I started on down that road, I started to see that I could also use that same template and help other people to understand how their life works. So a lot of times understanding, secure your own mask first. When I'm working with people in marriage counseling and second marriage counseling, sometimes it's been more than that. Finally, I want to start off with relational distances. I want to help them to understand how their relationships in the past have represented ways of maintaining psychological and emotional distance through vocational choices. Even sometimes when people marry across ethnic boundaries, they need to understand that that's a way of introducing psychological and emotional distance. And now there's nothing wrong with that. Some of those relationships are wonderful. They have as much chances as any marriage, but you have to understand what you've loaded on your plate. Age difference, that can be another one. As I said, vocational choices, personalities and personality, quote-unquote, disorders, and family of origin issues. So I'll do like a genogram, which is a map.
Yeah, you mentioned that last week. What is the genogram? What is that?
Well, it's just basically a sketch of the family. And what I do in genograms is I'm trying to help this individual not just get a picture of, it's not like a genealogy search. We're looking for relational distance. So I want to know, as I've mentioned some of these things, what was the ethnic background? What was the religious background? What was your father's vocation, your grandfather's vocation? I want to know something about the aunts and the uncles. I want to know the behavior of the family because I'm looking for the way they pushed each other away, the way they held at distance. Because what we do when we come into marriage, we've heard sayings like opposites attract and you marry your parents. What really is going on, I believe, is that we're repeating psychological and emotional distance that we've seen modeled. That's why it appears that we're marrying our parents or that opposites attract. But what we're really doing is we're repeating psychological and emotional distance. And we do it in lots of ways. So we've brought some of those up. Another thing I do with people is I teach them a self-analysis tool. I call it life perspectives. And it's really about recognizing anger when it doesn't even look like anger. Anger is rooted in shame and fear. And shame and fear is also where anxiety, depression comes from. And so all of these things that cause marriages to fail are at some point rooted back in our shame and fear. And so I try to teach people to recognize those signals and the anxiety and the depression and the shame and the fear, and then how to deal with those. And then And I had down here as the last one, the shame and fear issues. You know, I kind of just got through addressing that, but teaching people how to recognize my shame, my fear. What do I do about that? And also the fact that we're pursuing value, control, and power. And those are words that I use a lot. And again, this is a tool that I use, so it's not I actually have a teaching that I do on this that I work with people. I ask myself, or why does my wife act that way? Well, the simple answer, value, control, and power. Why did you do that? Value, control, and power. Why do we do everything we do? Value, control, and power. So to recognize that journey and to helps to take a lot of the mystery out of what the dance of the relationship is. So I was just those are just some of the things that I do when I'm talking to people and helping to walk them through getting on the right foot in relationship.
And this is not to blame parents or blame the family of origin, but it's to recognize problems, and because you don't want to repeat them.
Right.
So it's just a healthy exercise.
Yeah, there aren't any perfect parents. We've made mistakes raising our daughter, even though we tried not to, but there aren't perfect. Each generation gets the opportunity to build on what the other generation has done and do a little better job. So there aren't any perfect parents or perfect kids, but we're trying to be the best we can, and that's kind of what that's about. One of the things, as we kind of move forward here, we've kind of touched on, but just make it a point here, recognizing repeating patterns. So, for example, recognizing distances. So let's say the gal might say, my dad was an alcoholic, or my first husband was an alcoholic, and I'm not going to ever marry another alcoholic again. I say, well, what does this fellow do, this new fellow? Well, he's a traveling salesman. Well, you see, alcohol is a psychological and emotional distancer, but there's also a distance when the guy's not home. So a lot of times a person can be repeating the distance without recognizing he or she is repeating the distance. He's not an alcoholic, but he's also never home. Recognizing repeating patterns. One guy might say, my first wife felt like was always on my back about something, always riding me, And so this new girl that I'm interested in has three businesses, and she's too busy to care what I'm up to. Again, two different kinds of one psychological and emotional distancing is, you're riding the person, devaluing the person. The other one is she's never there. So again, recognizing distances, and then just to recognize the distance. A distance is not necessarily a red light. I can't have this relationship. But again, we need to recognize what we're dealing with, and then there needs to be a plan. How are we going to close the distance? I'm not saying don't marry a traveling salesman. but as a traveling salesman, he better have a plan for taking care of the relationship. A very proactive plan for taking care of the relationship. What's that going to be like? What's going to be our plan to close the distance, which is something that I tell people must be done on a daily basis, because the default of relationships is that we distance. And so there has to be something intentionally done every day to close the distance.
Perhaps the first marriage failed because of some sexual problems, and now this new relationship, no sexual problems, but that could also be a problem.
Yeah. So I have a one story. I it's just so poignant. I love to tell it, and so it's been many years ago. A man came to me. He was married to a gal, and he was coming alone. He wasn't quite sure where she was. Literally, he didn't know. They got married because he sort of lost a bet in a way. He was kind of the butt of a lot of jokes around his company in the military. He was kind of a Gomer Pyle sort of guy, and so they took him out one night and got him good and drunk, and then they introduced him to this gal who was working as a prostitute. He was a country boy, and so he wound up in bed with this prostitute. And the next morning, he thought the only thing he could do was propose to her, and because to make this an honorable thing. And she couldn't believe her luck, so she said, oh, absolutely. So they got married. And they actually had great sex because they were both drunk a lot. But then she had a medical emergency, and the doctor told her in the intensive care, said, you know, if you ever drink again, it'll kill you. Well, she had a son, and she didn't want to leave that son without a mother. And so she stopped drinking cold, and the sex stopped. Mm. Now, and it didn't continue for, they didn't have sex for years. What happened was when she stopped drinking, she also started going to school and got a bachelor's degree, got a government job. And all this time, her self-image is improving. For her, sex was not a respectful thing. But now that she had self-respect, she didn't want any part of sex. She had a nervous breakdown. Her son died, unfortunately, and she had a nervous breakdown. And then, long story shorter, at one point the sex started up again, and she started treating the sex almost like a prostitute contract, where she was timing it and that. And so when he came to me, he was saying that, you know, that the sex was really, really great again. But you see, it wasn't love. It wasn't affection. It was almost just the opposite. It was just they weren't making love. So a lot of times people will come and say, well, in my first marriage, he was abusive, or she was abusive, or on and on. But, you know, but the sex was great. I don't understand that. But you see, that's not an indicator that there was love. A lot of times that's an indicator of psychological and emotional distance.
You said a lot of times sexual problems are related to anger, too. You said that in the previous show.
Yeah, because anger is a, I define anger as a fear-shame-based defense mechanism, and it's associated with the gain or loss of value, control, and power. So in anger, it's fear-based, shame-based, and I'm after value, control, and power because of my fear and shame. And so anything I do, it doesn't have to look like anger. It can be the way I dress, the car I drive, the way I drive, the friends I have. I might spend money in search for value, control, and power. If it's fear and shame-based, then it's actually like an anger behavior, even though it doesn't look like anger. Mm. Humor can be anger. People, you know, there can be people who use humor to keep other people away. Fear and shame based, and it's related to the gain or loss of value, control, and power. Mm-hmm. Sex can be the same thing. Even in marriage, intimacy can be about value, control, and power, one or all of those, fear and shame based. Easy to make that connection. So even though it doesn't look like anger in the way that we would, recognize, you know, somebody with an angry face and angry words, it can be a grab for value, control, and power based in shame and fear. And then what happens is, once it is an anger behavior, it can easily become a very abusive behavior too. So what I tell people in that regard is, where when we're interested in another, in our marriage or second marriage or whatever, first thing, let's take care of, I tell people, talk to people about making love in the other parts of the house, not just the bedroom. You know, making love in the garage by, you know, is this the sort of guy that would change the oil in your car, wash your car, vacuum it out? Is he, you know, caring about you? What about making love in the kitchen? Is this a person who joins in the chores? And making love is showing you that you're the center of his, or you're the center of her life. So she's behaving in such a way, or he's behaving in such a way, that they're focused on you. So when they see you working, they want to chip in and help because they're serving you. So that's making love. Hmm. So if you're making love in these other areas, then what you do in the bedroom winds up being the making of love.
Well, those are some definite signs of some healing going on in your life. Before you get into that second marriage, there's marriage the second time around, the subject this week, we want to avoid the repeats of the past. And if we're so blessed to have a new relationship, we want to be sure that we're healed so that we can move forward. We're going to take a break here in a moment, moving forward into our next subject. But if you are struggling in your situation, maybe you've gone through a divorce, Daniel has done a lot of work with divorce recovery and people in several marriages. Yeah. And you can really offer some help and some advice and help walk a few miles with some people on some of these issues. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Sure. Call me at 425-778-6169. 425-778-6169. Or people also email me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com. And I also want to remind people, the current article up at ChristianCounselorsForum.com is on the purpose of marriage, which would be very appropriate for this topic.
And I think we're going to talk a little bit about the purpose of marriage in our second half today. Again, Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You are listening to Sound Mind.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along for this journey as well as we're looking at marriage the second time around, avoiding a repeat. And we want to avoid mistakes maybe we've made in a first marriage. And some really good stuff we're talking about this week with Daniel Pryor. Daniel, just before the break, we were kind of wrapping up on some of the things about healing. And you want to continue to give us kind of a checklist of ways to know if we really are healed and the person that we're looking at maybe for a second time.
Yeah, and of course, again, just to remind people that, you know, there's not an absolute assurance. I think Dr. Gottman has a program out there where he tests people to see. He's 75% assurance that's not 100% assurance, and I've actually run the math on that. It's not as...
It's more like 32.
Well, yeah. I mean, all you have to do is say, if you just eeny, meeny, miny, moe, you're going to be right half of the time.
Right.
But so people, one of the things people want to know, obviously, is, you know, they get to that point where, okay, I wonder if this is the right person. I'm about to make this commitment. Is this the right person? And then there isn't a way of knowing precisely. And fortunately, if we understand what the purpose of marriage is and we're working at that, marriage is actually a very forgiving. That's interesting. We just used the word forgiving here. Marriage is actually a very forgiving relationship.
It needs to be, yeah.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, we're human beings, and so as I said in the first part or the show previous, a lot of times when people come and say, you know, our marriage is failing, and I hear them talk about it, and to me it sounds like the marriage is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. It's not the marriage that's failing. We're failing to understand the marriage because marriage is about surrender. Marriage is about laying your life down, and that's what this relationship is trying to get you to do, but we're struggling against it, and that's why it's going wrong. So the romance might be going south, but the marriage is intact, and a lot of times people bail out before the marriage has a chance to make the changes that it could make. So in moving forward, understanding the purpose of marriage. Again, there's the article at ChristianCounselorsForum.com. Just kind of like the Cliff Note version of that would be the purpose of marriage, I believe, is to keep us human. Mm. You know, when we talk about human beings, we're really referring to the way we treat one another. That's what makes us human beings, our behavior toward one another. God created man and woman in relationship as almost... I've described it as a dynamic that's never at rest. It's one that always requires surrender, 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 because the man and woman will never ever see things in the very same way. We'll always approach it from two different perspectives. And I think that was God's intention. It's a dynamic that's never at rest, and it takes us deeper and deeper into what it means to be human. So the purpose of marriage, I think, is to make us human. Why is that so important? Because in our humanness is where we understand Christ.
There you go, and that's what it's all about.
This has to do with ultimately our relationship with God, and in our humanness is where we have that relationship with God in the Emmanuel, God with us. So this is marriage prepares us for that. How do I know if he or she is right is another question. And so, again, there's not an absolute guarantee here. But there are some things we can do, some things, some measures of wisdom that we can take here. we should pay attention to the distancing. So as I've said before, family of origin issues and genogram is a good idea to go into the genogram and look at what was the behavior of the grandfather toward the grandmother or the mother toward the father. You know, sometimes I find that, you know, grandmother was very religious and granddad didn't have time for it. Well, that to me represents a huge psychological and emotional distancing.
Yeah. That's going to be a problem, yeah.
Another time, somebody will say, oh, you know, grandmother was really strict. Everybody loved grandpa. He was everybody in town. Well, so that tells me that grandpa had a whole lot of superficial relationships, and he didn't have the deep one with grandma that she needed, so she was getting taken care of through the kids, and it was so that was all twisted. And again, when we go into marriage, we're repeating those distances that have been modeled. So I'm looking at family of origin things and genogram. His and her social network, a lot of times we can tell a lot about a person by the friends they hang with. And do you trust his friends? Do you trust her friends? What are their values? Why do you respect them? Why do you respect them? What do you respect about them? Again, you can tell a lot about a person. A lot of times, looking at that person, I might be a little bit in denial because I might be thinking, you know, she's such a wonderful gal. You know, of course, all of her friends are a little bit, I wouldn't trust them at all. But, you know, well, sometimes we're a bit in denial when we're focusing on that. It gives us a better view of the person if we can look out and see some of the friends. So that's one of the things that we might do. I have had a situation one time where a gal that I was able to help had been through a couple of marriages. The first one was very dysfunctional, a lot of alcohol. The second one, she had married actually a Christian man. He wasn't alcoholic. He didn't drink at all. But his way of distancing was to be very cold and controlling. Mm. And she found this out after they were married. And she had a daughter, and his behavior toward the daughter was so cold and distancing that this woman, they wound up getting a divorce again. So it's very difficult in that period of time because it was a Christian marriage and trying to work with the man to try to get him to see what he needed to do to save the relationship, but he just wouldn't respond, and so finally he just let it go. She met another man, and so she came back for counseling on this. And
how long was the between those two?
It was about two. It was about probably about
years.
2 years.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she came. So this time she didn't want to make a mistake on this. So we kind of did a checklist, and it was sort of my first time really. Trying this objective approach to, you know, trying to rule out the wrong guy. It's not easily done. But it was interesting, some of the things that we came up with. One of the things I wanted to know, I asked her if he was a problem solver. Or did he solve problems or did he blame people? And she came up with a couple of interesting things that she told me. She said, you know what he does? He makes quilts. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Well, he goes and buys rags like at the Goodwill in the rag bags or whatever. And he makes quilts. And so I thought, okay, that could be a positive thing because he's taking scraps and he's doing, she said, he built me, the rain was getting on my firewood and he built me a cover for the fire. And I thought, I've seen some of those. How did he do it? Well, he did it right. He raised the wood up out of the dirt, built a platform, then built a roof over it. So, okay, he's also very careful and meticulous. I mean, he's not sloppy. And that was, you know, I think that could be interpreted as him showing her that he loves her.
He wants to solve the problems that she raises. Yeah.
He had a daughter, and so I asked her about. So she said he raised the daughter by himself. Well, I always wonder about if it's a divorce situation and the husband winds up getting the kids, that means that the mother had to be pretty messed up. Mm. And so that to me focuses back on the guy, because how were you involved with a woman who was messed up enough that she lost the kids when, I mean, nobody's squeaky clean in these situations. So I'm trying to protect this gal, help her to protect himself. So mm-hmm. I want to know about this guy. So I was really interested in what he did when he raised his daughter. And one of the things that came out of that was that he built dollhouses for her out of scrap lumber, but these were dollhouses where lights worked.
Wow.
I mean,
really meticulous.
Really meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
And this was his show of you know, affection for his daughter. So, you know, I'm putting those things together and, you know, what does he do now? You know, he's, you know, does he just dream about things or does he actually do things? Because, you know, if a man's a dreamer, oh, he's got lots of big dreams. Well, dreaming can be an anger behavior. It can be an overreach for value, control, and power unless the person is willing to put steps to the dream and make it a goal, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at something like that. This guy looked pretty good. They wound up getting married. Now they've been married for, I think, 7 years, say it, seven, maybe 8 or 9 years going
Great.
On now. They've written a book together.
And the main difference was he was a kind of a practical problem
solver.
Well,
that was one of the things that we looked at. It's just hard to know what to look at, but that was one of the things that we looked at. So that worked out really well for her. Yeah.
Well, there's so many. We didn't even get into addiction issues that are going on possibly as a bad sign, but people want to avoid mistakes. They want to avoid a repeat of a divorce, and you have worked with so many people through the years who are recovering from divorce and have successfully moved on with a new relationship. If people find themselves in that right now, either they want to save a marriage that's struggling or they've been divorced recently and they don't know what to do, it sounds like you can offer some great help.
Yeah, get a hold of me at 425-778-6169. People also email me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com. And also, one more time, reminding people of the current article at ChristianCounselorsForum.com is on the purpose of marriage. It's a good read, and it refers to a couple of other articles that are going to be really critical and helpful for people, even in their first marriage or second marriage.
Well, great help. Your heart is to help people, counselor, and also a life coach. There's nothing that gets us along in life better or in bad ways sometimes than a marriage that's in dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So we want to get through life. But you said the wonderful purpose of marriage is to help us to be more like Jesus. And we want to see marriages strong. Again, BibleBasedCounselor.com to contact Daniel Pryor. This has been Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.